The weather is cooling down a bit. The leaves are starting to fall. Yes, it's that time of year again, football season. And we all know the best part of any game day traditions are the ones that involve food. There's nothing like having everyone in your game day crew coming together to bring their best bites and argue over whose family makes the best chili. And while there's no need to mess with the perfection of game day classics, like a freshly grilled Oscar Mayer hot dog topped with Heinz ketchup and mustard, it's always fun to step out of your comfort zone and get creative with your recipes. Because there's nothing more fun than adding to your list of game day traditions, like making a creamy and delectable queso dip with Velveeta cheese that can be eaten with so much more than just chips. Now is the chance for people across the nation to find out whose game day eats reign supreme. It's your turn to show off your tasty game day food traditions. Go to www.gamedayfoodtraditions.com to share a photo of your game day food tradition to enter to win $10,000. Once again, that's www.gamedayfoodtraditions.com to enter to win $10,000.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody, you do your job. Just stay
there. Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Split Zone Duo Single Wing, splitzoneduo.com, patreon.com/SZD. My name is Stephen Godfrey at 38 Godfrey on most of the social media platforms. Hello. I'd like to talk about Hugh Freeze potentially in a positive way. Please don't stop listening or watching. Please stop. I promise. It'll make sense. Okay. Depending on when you watch this, it'll be last week. It might be this week. Hugh Freeze was going into the Georgia week for his Auburn Tigers. And there was a little bit of kind of a viral mess, a hullabaloo about Freeze and how much time it should take, and dramatic sips of coffee there. What you probably saw on social media was Hugh Freeze kind of goofing by saying, I can't believe it, or like, Kirby only took 2 years to build Georgia. He didn't know. And then he said, y'all should look it up, and someone does and proves him wrong. And like, that's what you saw probably or heard about. Here's the reality. We're going to play a whole clip for you today, because God help me, he's trying to make a point that isn't wrong. He just does it in a very Hugh Freeze type of way. And then I want to bridge into why none of us can tell him if he's wrong and what the mess with expectation is right now, because I think it's really unique to this moment that we're having in college football. So, all right, first thing we're going to do, all right, our behind the scenes team, we have them. You can't see them. They're behind the scenes. Hector and Anthony, we're going to roll a clip of Hugh Freeze. And what you're going to hear is pretty standard stuff, especially when you're about to get your ass whooped. I assume they got their ass whooped. Again, you might be watching this after the fact. Going into Georgia week for Auburn. Okay, so let's roll that.
Hey, Coach. Kirby's coming in here, two-time defending national champion. I know you've been out of the conference for a few years, but from afar, watching what he's done and what he's built over there, what impresses you the most with that program and what he's done?
Well, I played Kirby his first year when I was still at Ole Miss, and I know kind of what he inherited because I coached in that game, and I know what the outcome was. And I think it's a great testament to his vision, to his work ethic, to his staff, to his administration being patient and allowing him to go have the years he needed to recruit. And the dividends are paying off greatly. I mean, they're one of the gold standards in college football right now. And, you know, you're recruiting a top three class every single year, and that's hard to compete with, and they're well coached. And so, you know, you got to give them credit. I know it's a rivalry game, but the truth is the truth. And he's built a dang good football program there with, so that means a lot of things, or it means he's got the support from the administration. It means he's got the support from the fans.
Okay. Pretty standard, right? Nothing really shocking there. That's what you would do. So he's trying to achieve something here, which is to show the Auburn faithful, the people who are going to write checks to the program in various capacities, man, we need to emulate what Georgia's done. That's how you do it, right? Problem is, old Hugh, the Rev, didn't realize it's not a great comp to make for this reason, which is probably what you already saw. So let's roll that.
I don't know how long it took him. I don't know what it took him, 3 years or so to get there, or 4 years. I don't know. Some of y'all could do the research, but his second year, that's, I don't know that that's accurate, but anyway, so he did it pretty fast then. That's pretty impressive. It's even more impressive.
Okay, I love the awkwardness at the end of that, where he's trying to throw the media under the bus because he got caught in the moment. I'm somewhat familiar with that tactic. Yeah, so our buddy didn't do his research. I'm not shocked. It turns out this is not a great comp to make unless you think Auburn is going to be playing for a national championship next year. Auburn people don't think they were going to be playing for a national championship next year. But the worm kind of turned on social media, and Auburn fans said, well, you know, we're in a much worse situation than Georgia was. Okay. Why is that? Well, you know, we inherited Brian Harsin's mess. Okay. All right. Cool. Well, you know, they did fire Mark Richt for a reason. You know, that reason that was Georgia wasn't playing good football, right? And that they wanted to be playing at a transcendent national championship level. And to that point, they never really had been, right? So I would certainly not argue that Mark Richt is a better SEC head coach than Brian Harsin. But how bad off was Georgia and how bad off was Auburn? Because we're comparing two very different things, right? It's all about two different eras. You got the NIL and the portal era and how fast things can happen now. Which, yes, it means we're going to have to talk about the portal in a second. We're going to talk about Deion Sanders and everything else. It's not my fault, it's y'all's. It's what everybody wants to talk about. But this idea that, you know, Hugh Freeze has inherited this terrible mess, I want to sit with that for a second. That's not entirely wrong. It's also not entirely right. But the problem is we don't know. We know we shouldn't grade on a binary, a yes, no, right? I think we should. We realize there's so much context involved, and the sport has changed so much in the last couple of years that we can't just simply say, you know what, Hugh, you're right. Georgia had a better situation. I will say that Mark Richt's last couple of years, albeit not national title caliber, are 2013, 8-5 is his worst season. 10-3 and 9-3. That's how he goes out. A little bit different than Brian Harsin. There's an apparatus at play at Georgia that is certainly not national title caliber in these years, but they are functioning. They are showing up to the event with a iron shirt, and they do not vomit on themselves in the process. The same cannot be said for the Harz era on the Plains. So, all right, we'll give Hugh a little bit there. However, we don't have the portal, right? We don't have the quick fix era that's killing year zero. And this is kind of where I want to head with this. And this is also where I think it's the media. You can never tell at Auburn, because much like many, many fan bases, and I shouldn't call them fan, media bases, media cores, Auburn does this thing, and a lot of schools do it now, where they stock the room with like friendly faces. Hugh's hiring would be a great example, where no one was able to magically, and I know there were good reporters in the room, no one was able to get a word in edgewise and actually ask Hugh a question about his sordid past. It was all just like, hey, man, what's this moment mean for you? Like, there's a lot of that. So I don't know if this next question is asked by a reporter or a plant or house media, or I don't know. But this individual asks, and we're going to set up this last clip and kind of let it finish and roll out here. This could be Pravda. I don't know. But the setup is what a reasonable amount of time should be to expect success. And let's pause real fast. Success at Auburn would mean what? Winning SEC championships, certainly winning your division. I know that those aren't really going to exist anymore, but like, you know, being a playoff team, right? That's success. Competing for national titles, success. Because there's a lot of crazy fan bases, a lot of existential crises in the wake of one dominant SEC run for so long, Nick Saban at Alabama. Auburn's at the top of the list, because now you have Georgia, the other rival, emulating and maybe supplanting them, whereas Auburn's still Auburn. Okay, so it's a valid question. How long is it going to take Auburn to be successful? Let's roll it.
I don't get to decide that. The good thing is I don't worry about that anymore. I used to, but I'm older now, and I am totally comfortable in the way we are building this program and mentoring young people and teaching them the lessons that football teaches for life. And the wins will come. I believe that firmly. But whatever people's patience level is really, I can't control that. So I can't worry about it. And I really don't worry about it. And I worry about the people in this building, our administration, and I worry about our fans too, but I can't control their patience level. And I think it's, I don't know. Can I be really candid? I think it's kind of ridiculous, that those are already discussions in and around our kids. I do, but it's not something that we worry about, but they should expect us to improve. And that's a reasonable expectation and play hard. And I think our kids have played hard. And so, I'll let the other people that really matter decide their patience level. I know there's a lot of programs that have taken 3 to 4 to 5 years to get where they are now, and you know they're probably happy that they did that. But everybody's got to decide their own feelings on that, and I can't worry about that.
Okay, so he's lying here, obviously. Like, we would get to a point in this process where Hugh Freeze would start lying. That's how it works. He definitely has to worry about that, right? He definitely has to be held to account by people who are probably going to be irrational. This idea of, I only got to worry about people in this building. Well, guess who those people in the building have to worry about? The people who you claim not to. We're all just playing a shell game here. All right, stop it. That's fine. I knew you were going to get your bullshit eventually, Hugh. But I don't know how wrong he is. And I don't know how to judge anybody right now. So let's keep picking at Hugh for a second, because why not? And I deserve to. Last year, Auburn beat A&M. This year, Auburn lost to A&M. Last year was Brian Harsin's terrible roster, which is that's what Auburn fans are telling me right now is the reason why Auburn is bad, is Brian Harsin's terrible roster. Even though in 2023, it's not Brian Harsin's terrible roster. It's Hugh Freeze's roster in progress. Because when you pull up a list of starters on offense, and that's Hugh Freeze, offensive head coach. We're gonna judge him like that, okay? You don't see like a ton of Harsin era guys. Now, this makes sense on a couple levels. One, like they run wildly different offenses, but two, like we're living in the portal era, okay? So if you look at the two deep, you've got, if you're talking just about portal signings or transfers in, just people who were not this terrible Brian Harsin roster, I got a wide receiver, a left tackle, a center, a right tackle, a tight end, and a quarterback, probably the most notable position, obviously, Peyton Thorne. And then as you go on, there's a couple of linemen that, you know, and then you've got other receivers and skill position players down the chart. I mean, probably the one position that holds over the most, at least if you're looking at a two deep, is that running back. And right guard, who knows? Right and left guard, okay? Now, is this Hugh Freeze's ideal offense? No. Is this Hugh Freeze's high school recruited offense? No. I mean, like, it's one signing. That hasn't changed, right? You can only sign one high school class at a time. But we are in the portal era. Okay, so what does that mean? It means that it's not fair to completely excuse a year one anymore. I don't even know if year zero exists anymore. Period. I've had this question asked to me, and this is why I wanted to bring this up this week, because when I open the SED mailbag every week, I'm getting questions from Purdue fans in year one, questions from Mississippi State fans in year one, questions from Texas Tech fans in year two, questions from fan bases at like formidable, respectable programs in the Power Five or the Big Two or whatever we're going to call them. And they have no idea when to say, all right, where's my ROI? Where is my sign that this is working? How much patience should I extend? Why isn't this roster better? And I think part of our broken brain right now is because you saw in this tiny little amount of time, and some of us kept screaming, we need to wait. We're getting out of hand, dude. We're getting out of hand. Colorado. Well, we got out of hand with Colorado. 75, 74. I don't know, I wrote a column about it in the Post. It was in the 60s, 70s of total transfers. Now, what's crazy about that number is not that number. What's crazy about that number is it reset the bar so high so fast that when we're going to go back in a second and talk about Michigan State, it's not even going to make sense to our minds. Colorado comes out and they start 3-0 after being 1-11. Context tells you they got a better quarterback, they got better skill position players, and that seems to be, in the tiny amount of time that we've had, the trend that you have to identify, which is if you swap out your skill positions, you're probably going to see an immediate return on investment in the portal in year one, regardless of the shape of the roster. What we don't know is what happens after that, which brings me to Michigan State. In 2021, Mel Tucker earned the title Portal King before he earned the title Fucking Idiot for fumbling the greatest bag in the history of fumbled bags. I want to reiterate, this is not a single wing about Mel Tucker, although that news is sort of developing right now that he's trying to sue Michigan State. Although I'm pretty sure, unless there was some sort of moment at gunpoint I didn't know about, he elected to jack it on the phone with a sexual assault advocate and survivor. That's the most expensive orgasm that any man I know will ever have by himself. Soak that in one more time. Regardless of what you think about even race, regardless of what you think about race, politics, media, Mel Tucker just committed the most expensive unassisted orgasm in the history of heterosexual males. Okay, we can move on. So Mel Tucker in Michigan State, 15 transfers, 15 going into 2021. Do you remember that season when he was called the Portal King? 15, that's it. That's an average year. Auburn took 20 and lost 20 this year. Spoiler alert. So Auburn portal flipped, changed, whatever you want to call it, more players on their roster than Portal King 2021 Mel Tucker. Was Michigan State in better shape going into 21 than Auburn was going into 23? Maybe? Hard to tell. What are we looking at? By the way, they have a quarterback in common, and we'll get there in a second, okay? 15 transfers in 2021 for Michigan State. They take the world by storm. In a pre-Dion world, this was amazing. This was insane. This is how Mel gets his bag, is that LSU's looking for a new head coach. And the rate at which Michigan State is winning and the style in which they're winning by scoring a lot of points on offense. Now, granted, it's all Kenneth Walker, right? It's one guy. Did you know where he played before this? Be honest. You didn't. Does anyone talk about Kenneth Walker in regards to Wake Forest in years? No, right? He was 1 year at Michigan State, changes everything. Okay. So that happens, and before it can even come to completion, I mean, before Ohio State can even completely destroy Michigan State secondary, which is strong evidence that, hey, you've done good work here in year one and something has happened. Like, you took a roster and it took well to the 15 names that you brought in, but you're not complete and you're not done and you're not ideally where you want to be. But before all that happened, Mel Tucker gets a banger extension. Massive extension, like Dabo Saban money from a Michigan State program that wants to appear like, hey, we're serious about this. We're serious about contending against Michigan, against Ohio State, against Penn State, and the future of the Big Ten. And we want to build a perennial playoff team. No more of this workman-like Mark D'Antonio turning two stars into three stars bullshit. Okay, cool. Thing is, because Mel Tucker had the most expensive unassisted orgasm in heterosexual male history, we don't know how the experiment ends. It's 2023. We know that Michigan State came tumbling back to earth last year. We know that Kenneth Walker went to the NFL. We know that the offense basically ran through him. But I also know this. Peyton Thorne's at Auburn. Keon Coleman is at Florida State. Keon Coleman, beating LSU, beating Clemson, real good ass receiver. Not at Michigan State. Okay, what does this tell us pre-Dion about relying on the portal? Is that even the right verb? Did they rely on it? It's 15. Most schools now have 15 average in and out in a given year. So what does that mean?
We don't know.
We don't know. I will take Mel Tucker at his word, and I think it was an Athletic Profile this summer, this past summer, going into the 23 season, talking about, look, the ideal here is a balance between having a great, well-recruited roster from the high school level and then complementing it with the right players that come in. And that's kind of what Florida State did to a degree. They didn't just fix their problem overnight, and they had bad seasons and they lost to Jacksonville State, but they retrenched and reorganized on what, like, who they were in Florida high schools. And that was the start of it. And then you saw, oh man, key receiver, key tight end, boom, sudden jump from, you know, we're a solid B team to we're an A minus team that now is like playoff fringe. I know how they looked against Boston College. Just stay with me. Where does that leave Michigan State? We don't know. We don't know what they were going to look like this year. There's zero way you can judge 2023 Michigan State on anything that the way Tucker was removed. And I'm not arguing against it. I'm basically arguing for it. You fucking moron. It decimates the football team. So there's no football product now that we can go, oh, this is how, like, they're going to 110% lose more games than they probably would have against with Mel Tucker in a stable environment. You also have kids that are just straight up like, now fuck this, I'm out of here. And they have every right to do that, by the way. Okay, so where does this leave Auburn? Where does this leave Purdue fans who are asking me about a brand new head coach a month into his first season? Is this something that old Vanguard media is just going to go, we should blame Dion because now everybody's going to try and flip 60, 70 kids in a year? No. When I have questions like this, I go and I ask people who work in the industry because I don't have the answers and I'm not equipped to. I don't have the knowledge base to do that. So when I talk to people, what scares me and the reason I'm making this video slash podcast right now is that nobody really has the same answer and nobody really feels confident in what they're saying. That should scare you. Scare because the people you trust to manage your football team don't exactly know what's going on. Scare might still be an overreach. Rather than let it scare you, what I would suggest is that it give you some sense of grace or patience. So I just rattled off a bunch of teams that are in year one or year two. We don't know how this should look. Why, you know, why didn't you portal more? Or, hey, you're in year one. Why didn't you come in and flip 30 guys instead of 10 or 20? Why didn't you get 50? Why didn't you get out and do the Carnival Barker thing that Deion Sanders has done? Well, first off, let's go back and talk about what we think makes a good portal team right now. Colorado's got it. They brought in a dynamic new offensive coordinator in Sean Lewis, and then Deion handled the recruitment of key players at key skill positions. You know what they don't have? Linemen. We knew that the entire time. That's one thing that the anti-Deion crowd was right about all offseason. The problem is we didn't get to a point where that could be stressed and tested and proven until they played Oregon. TCU wasn't built to do that. TCU turned over a ton. Colorado State, definitely not built to do that. Nebraska in yet another year one, same situation. So what if you're a Nebraska fan right now? Matt Rhule, really good collegiate blueprint, like impeccable almost. Don't worry about the Panthers. Why are there people in Lincoln saying like, well, shit, why didn't we just like flush the whole Scott Frost era? And like, why don't we have 70 kids and like go find a 5-star quarterback? I'm seeing this out. This is not a hypothetical. I'm seeing people talk like this at Auburn. I'm seeing people talk like this at Nebraska. I'm seeing people talk like this in various fan bases. Maybe a better comp or a better discussion point would be something like Washington. The trick with Washington is the context, because it wasn't a bad program. And this is, again, where I might give Hugh Freeze like a little bit of credit. Washington had a roster that was maybe not like a luxury sports car, but a really, really nice, like, UConn Denali that got run, just rant. Which redneck version of the verb am I going to use? Some bitch drove it into a ditch. Jimmy Lake was not fit to be a head coach. We figured this out. We thought he was. He fucked it up. The vehicle was still very nice and salvageable. Also, what did they do? What did Kalen DeBoer do? What's the first thing he did? He brought in a dynamic quarterback who was in a bad situation in Indiana relative to his talent, shop at home field. And he matched his offensive prowess with that kid's raw ability. And now all of a sudden, the Washington that was a distressed but still valued, like had good bones, right? They renovated that. They fixed the team culture. Hey, the roster's really not actually that bad. Plus, man, we got a motherfucker quarterback and we got receivers around him. Voila. That's it. Year two, national title contender as I record this. So maybe even if you're completely impatient and you're at Auburn or you're at Nebraska, I can kind of feel like, I get where you're coming from, like looking at Washington. Don't look at Colorado. A big reason not to look at Colorado, logo alert, a big reason not to look at Colorado, they just got their ass kicked by Oregon. Washington's a better program. It's going to be hard with Colorado for the rest of the year to put them in context with anything, even them fucking selves. It's just going to be bad for a while because it's so overhyped, but it's also overexamined. I'm not going to do a Colorado show right now. Just trust me when I say, please don't try to think, oh, my school should be doing, and then insert Colorado in here. We don't even know what the Colorado thing in year one is actually going to yield. We know that they were 1-11. We know that they're probably, if I had to bet on it without looking at the schedule, 7-5, 8-4 at the worst, right? By the end of the year. Like, a lot of fan bases would take that in a heartbeat. How many Deons can there be? How many times can you pull this trick? And then also, what happens next year at Colorado, right? Everyone's buying in the Deion circle of like, this is the worst he's ever, or this is it. Get your shots in now. That's what he said after Oregon. Really? Because do you just keep roster flipping like Lane Kiffin? Because that doesn't beat the Oregons. I know the Pac-12 is falling apart, but just stay with me. If you had to play Oregon every single year, which Colorado won't, moving on, or Washington or USC every single year, you won't beat those teams. Because Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss is a great example. They can't beat Alabama. They won't beat Georgia this year. They probably won't beat LSU. So this idea that you're going to do this every year, Deion's going to have to do the hard, long thing to become Oregon, which is work the high schools. That's we think we know that right now. We think we know that had Mel Tucker stayed at Michigan State, there are ways to manipulate and create outliers positively if you hit on the portal the right way. But what we don't know is what does the portal naturally take away from you? We saw it take away a lot from Michigan State going into this season, and we're not 110% sure why. So we don't know if it's truly a double-edged sword and Michigan just happened to benefit circumstantially in that first year, Michigan State, sorry. We don't know. Okay, so if you're a Purdue fan or you're an Auburn fan or you're a whatever fan, I have to tell you the hardest thing right now is to just hang tight. If you're a fan at Arizona State, they're bad right now. Is it possible for Kenny Dillingham to go through and just say, you know what? Flush it, 70 new guys. Sure. And I've kind of played around joking with people in the industry, coaches and personnel people about that. But there's one thing that doesn't get talked about a lot right now. And that's that this idea of portal transfers as an equal value set as traditional four-year recruits. No. I'm not a believer in the idea that, oh, you're in the portal for a reason. That was the big knock when the portal first came out. And I think it's people who have kind of coach poison brains in the media to say that, because the portal started and the majority were looking down on it. Then the majority realized they had to get in on it. And so that tone and tenor changed in the media. Magic how that happens. But this idea that it's going to replace going out, competing for and landing a series of 4- and 5-star offensive and defensive linemen who are going to build the spine of your team, that's not going to happen. What we know in the handful of years with a couple of decent sort of case examples is that it's a great way to complement. You can buttress, you can add on, you can flare. You can't build a spine with it. And what Colorado is trying to tell you is right now, we think we can. We just don't know how long that spine's going to last. Not Colorado speaking. We don't, because it's only been a month of football, not even a season. So is Hugh Freeze right? No. And this is where everything I just said falls by the wayside. I'm not trying to contradict everything I said, which was be patient. We're studying a market right now. The math is completely inexact. It's we don't have enough data. And we know that successful recruiting, and it's what he said in the clip, right? Top 3, top 5 recruiting classes year after year after year. That's what Hugh Freeze in his head is trying to get out to you, is saying like, Auburn's not there. We haven't signed top 20. We haven't signed top 10. We haven't signed top 5 consistently. And if you are looking for a reliable measuring stick in the Southeastern Conference, that's as reliable as you're probably going to get. And even there, there's variance, right? Texas A&M variance. He's still not right, though. And this is where I'm trying not to contradict myself and bring this thing home. You're still suffering the whims of your employer. And your employer at Auburn is the entire fan base. It's the cult. It's whatever you want to make fun of them for. They've been driven mad by the last 15 years. I don't blame them. I don't think you should either. But can't believe I'm talking about Hugh Freeze in this context again. You're either lying openly or the dumbest human being that God ever blew breath into. If you don't think that anything else that's happening in college football, positively for someone else, that you don't have at least a significant portion of your fan base, including the people who matter, like the check writers, looking at that and going, that, why can't we do that? Patience is out of stock on the Plains, and I understand it. I get it. Alabama has built the greatest run in the history of the sport with the greatest coach in the history of the sport. And the follow-up back, the encore, as they walk back on stage after a humiliation, the parade from hell if you're an Auburn fan. The encore is that your other rival plays a cover song that might be better than the original and fucks you from that angle. If you're an Auburn fan, if you're a booster, I get it. You are exhausted. You are a little mad, a little insane. That's how I justify not making fun of Auburn directly for hiring Hugh Freeze and just making fun of like a smaller consortium of idiots. I think there's a lot of really good Auburn fans out there who are trying to talk themselves into this, because I'll be honest with you, I'm a fan of sports teams too. And I've been there where you're trying to look, I tried to talk myself into Bobby Petrino as a head coach in the NFL. But Hugh Freeze has to know the situation he stepped into. And the situation that he stepped into, one, was desperate enough to hire him. Two, is fanatically looking for relevance. And three, is built on the backs financially of fans and donors and boosters who are beyond impatient. So whether it's fair or not, Hugh, and no, I'll go ahead and tell you, they're not going to give you enough time to string together 5 top 5 recruiting classes before they expect something from you. They want it fucking now. And the thing that we haven't figured out yet is how to have that 10-win Michigan State season the first year and then have the 10-win Michigan State season from 2021 and 2022 and 23 and on and on and on and on and on. That's what we don't know yet. Because what we're ultimately asking for is, can the transfer portal and NIL create a situation where on day one, a new head coach and a new staff comes in, and the first thing they do is they bring everything back to a 10-win level of success at a program, regardless if they sucked, if they had an underperforming guy in Mark Richt and he was kind of in the tail end of his career. No, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if it was a smoking crater. Bam, give me 10 wins. Now, immediately after that, I want to see no depreciation and drop off. I want to see instant success and consistency after that, that has, that we know is built long term out of high school recruiting. We need it right fucking now. No one's done that. It may not be possible. But because of the volatility the element introduced in portaling, we have some kind of scrambled our brains and we don't really have internal an internal compass anymore. So we see like, well, man, coach went out. There's 20 guys who left. There's 20 new guys. Well, I like my new coach. So that means the 20 new guys that came in have to be better than the 20 old guys. And since most of them are the starters on offense, that means we're going to have a better offense, right? Probably not. That's not how it works. That's the problem. We can't understand it yet because we haven't had enough time. Time is not a luxury, though, for the people who are actually doing the work. If what I said sounds insane, you're not wrong. Welcome to college football's working environment. Also, Hugh, you should give Mel a call because I just feel like you both could workshop some things. You do know that, like, you can get a Cricket Wireless account for $19, right?